Welcome to the January 2015 podcast for Neurosurgical Focus. I'm Natalie Pincham. This issue is on the topic of low-grade gliomas, pathophysiology and management strategies. In this podcast, topic editor Dr. Bob Carter of the University of California speaks with Dr. Florian Ringel of Technische Universität München. They discuss Dr. Ringel and colleagues' article, Functional Preoperative and Intraoperative Mapping and Monitoring, Increasing Safety and Efficacy in Glioma Surgery.
This is for the January issue of the Neurosurgery Focus, or JANUS Focus. And your article was selected in the context of a series of articles that were all about low-grade glioma. And the title of your article is Functional Pre- and Intraoperative Mapping and Monitoring, Increasing Safety and Efficacy in Glioma Surgery. So perhaps you could give me a brief summary of the article from your perspective, and then we can talk a little bit more about it.
So what we summarize in this article is the present techniques of the preoperative pre-surgical mapping of neurological function, basically motor function and language function, and the intraoperative identification of functional cortex or subcortical structures. We gave an overview of the techniques which are available and the evidence available so far, how much it helps. We start with the preoperative techniques, and basically there are three different techniques which are important for pre-surgical identification of functional relevant brain structures. So we focus on language and motor, and the one very common one is functional magnetic resonance imaging, which is very commonly in use in a lot of institutions. And we just gave information how it works, what the measured parameter is, that it's a surrogate parameter, it's not real electrophysiology, which is measured by functional MRI. And this is a certain problem that what we measure with functional MRI is neurovascular coupling, and it's not really electrophysiology. And within the vicinity of certain tumors, there can be some neurovascular uncoupling, which can generate false negative results for functional magnetic resonance imaging. Therefore, the technique is not really reliable when we're planning a resective procedure for brain tumor. The other technique we summarize is magnetoencephalography, which is limited to a low number of centers, and the experience with this technique is also limited since it's a very costly technique and only in a few centers. And the third technique for pre-surgical mapping is a navigated transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is the transcranial magnetic stimulation is an old technique. However, it's just experienced a more interest since it's available in very good navigated systems, which does allow us to get real electrophysiological information on where primary motor area is in a navigated image. And we do have, there is already good experience out there with the mapping of motor function prior to surgery and using transcranial magnetic stimulation. The first experience is also using it for pre-surgical language mapping.
It's very interesting because I've seen the rise of navigated TMS in terms of interest emerging in a few centers in the United States. And is this a technique that you've begun to develop personally with some experience?
Yeah, we do have some experience here. We did quite some stuff on motor mapping using TMS and compared it to functional MRI and compared it to direct cortical stimulation and looked whether how good the representation of TMS motor function is. And there's quite good correspondence to the intraoperative direct cortical stimulation with regard to the areas where motor function is identified. So it works quite well. There are some spatial limitations of the system, of the navigation system, and you have to bring it to the OR in your navigation system, which is prone to some minor spatial mistakes. But apart from that, it matches very well to the direct cortical stimulation concerning motor mapping. And we do have some experience here with language mapping. We did a first study together with the Berlin group comparing pre-surgical language mapping using transcranial magnetic stimulation and comparing it to direct cortical stimulation in the OR. What we find when using this, it's a different technique you use when doing motor or language. When doing language, we have to use a burst of stimuli. We have to use repetitive TMS in order to get inhibition of function, which means we have to generate a virtual lesion to inhibit language production or language function. Thereby, we can as well identify pre-surgical language areas. and we matched it to the direct cortical stimulation. What we see when comparing it, there is some matching results, but on the other hand, we get more false positive results with the pre-surgical mapping, but a low number of false negatives, which means when we don't see motor function when using TMS language mapping prior to surgery, the likelihood of finding language function there during surgery is very low.
Very good, and I think that's an important point to make, which is it tends to be on the conservative side in terms of your mapping and probably helps you in that way, obviously, avoid injury. Let me ask you, on the repetitive TMS for language inhibition, what percentage, roughly, of patients are you able to elicit an inhibitory response? In other words, if you're searching around and you're trying to find language areas and you're doing the pulsing of the TMS, is it most patients that you're able to successfully find language?
Yeah, in the largest number of patients, we're able to get some areas of language inhibition. You have to play a little bit with the intensity of the stimulation, with the frequency of the stimulation. But when doing this and doing larger areas of stimulation, you'll get language inhibition in all of the patients.
Very interesting. Now, in your center, do you typically have this as an MD-level supervised evaluation, or is this done by a technical staff that's been trained and has experience with the technique?
Concerning our center, we have it MD-supervised. We do have MDs taking care of this, but generally doing the motor mapping is something which can be done by a technician, and there are centers which do have the experience which compare it and look at the results very closely when handing it over motor TMS motor mapping to a technician, and they found that they get very reproducible results after a very short period of time. So it's something, doing TMS motor mapping is something you can hand over to a technician, because we do have a very established protocol for motor mapping, and it's a very stable protocol. Concerning language, it's more demanding playing or adjusting the parameters of stimulation. So at the moment, it's still MD-supervised, and I think there needs to be some work done of defining or further fine-tuning the protocol for language mapping.
And do you find that the historical protocols that were used for fMRI or MEG mapping can be adapted to navigated TMS? So, for example, either language tests that are expressive in nature versus receptive in nature, is it as straightforward to move those over to navigated TMS, or is that what you're talking about some of the adjustments that you might have to make?
No, I think the adjustments are more on the stimulation and the technical stimulation. The frequency of this stimulation, the point of stimulation when in relation to the image presentation is stimulated. The test paradigms we use are the same we use during surgery. It's an object presentation, and you can go on to other paradigms of language testing, the same as you use during the OR.
Very good. Tell me then, when you're now trying to integrate DTI imaging and your subcortical stimulation, tell me a little bit about what you elucidated in the paper in terms of technique and your preferred set of protocols.
For the intraoperative stimulation, we do have different techniques, which are the low-frequency technique and the high-frequency technique. And I think there's a difference whether you look at the U.S., where you use a lot of 60 hertz low-frequency stimulation in comparison to Europe, where we do use more of the high-frequency stimulation. And our protocol at present is to use high-frequency stimulation, whether we do cortical stimulation, which means for motor stimulation, or we do subcortical stimulation for motor stimulation. For language stimulation, we always use the classical 60 hertz technique. You asked for a comparison to DTI, how we use the subcortical DTI information and subcortical stimulation. I think DTI at our department just gives us a kind of a starting point where we should expect it about where the fibers are, and we would start earlier with the subcortical stimulation, because DTI is just imaging information, which it's anatomic information, no functional information per se, and when using it in a navigated system, it's prone to the navigation error. So I much more rely on the subcortical stimulation, on the electrical stimulation, than this imaging information. The DTI is just an add-on to give you some information where a tract might be pushed away and where you need to go to start of your stimulation.
So in this case, what you'd be describing, if you have a tumor which may reasonably be considered to be displacing either motor subcortical tracts, anteriorly or posteriorly, you might get a gross view of that based on essentially the DTI imaging. So you may know, okay, it's anterior, but you're really going to rely on your subcortical stimulation to tease that out.
Yeah, you need the stimulation because you need electrophysiology, because all you get from DTI is just anatomic information. And it's especially when you look at tumors with a large, big edema, you can get always disturbance of your DTI signal and this edema surrounding tumors. So it's not 100% reliable information. You will always need your electrical stimulation in order to identify those subcortical tracts and maintain them.
And your definition of high frequency, you talked about your 60 hertz low frequency stimulation. So what hertz are you using for your high frequency stimulation?
What we use is the train of five stimulation, which means five for motor stimulation, which means a short burst of five stimuli in comparison to the 60 hertz repetitive stimuli and ongoing stimulation. It's all small bursts of stimulation.
What is your sense in terms of giving consideration to surgeons that may be at different centers, some at large academic centers, some at regional centers where perhaps the full complement of technologies may not be available? How do you position technologies in this fashion, either in your home country of Germany? Is it such that all patients should go to a center which has the whole potpourri of techniques? Or are some patients treated in centers where maybe only a part of these techniques are available?
My personal opinion would be if you do have a tumor growing in an unallocated area where you get the risk of harming important functional tissue, you should the basis you should rely on is intraoperative stimulation. You should have this tumor treated at a center where these techniques are available, whether it's cortical or subcortical stimulation. Apart from this, everything else, whether you have pre-surgical mapping using transcranial magnetic stimulation or fMRI, magnetoencephalography, I think this is when you do have your intraoperative stimulation, you don't need these pre-surgical techniques and you don't need DTI fiber tracking. But you should have, when looking for eloquent tumors, you should have the option to have intraoperative electrical stimulation in order to identify cortical functional areas and all the subcortical tracts.
I think that's an important point because obviously with navigated TMS or any concept of functional anatomic imaging, one has in essence a gross roadmap. But at the time of surgery, I think what I'm hearing you say is that gold standard of being able to directly stimulate either cortically or subcortically and understand those functional pathways is critical because of a variety of things that can happen at surgery. Shifts in the anatomy itself, false understanding of the tracts based on edema or other parameters, or in the case of fMRI, neurovascular decoupling, which may throw you off as well. So all of these things give you, again, a gross view, but what I'm hearing Dr. Ringel say is stimulation is the gold standard.
I would say stimulation is the gold standard because this is really electrophysiology, and all other techniques you use, or the imaging techniques, the fMRI, DTI fiber tracking, those are either showing anatomic information or using a surrogate parameter to identify functional areas, but it's not really electrophysiology. And yeah, that TMS is electrophysiology, but I think this is just some add-on information you can have prior to surgery. Or when taking a patient to surgery, gold standard would be intraoperative electrical stimulation.
Now, tell us, you've been practicing neurosurgery for many years now, and you're considered an expert in these types of eloquent regent tumors. What is your current preferred modality in terms of evaluating and then treating a patient, say, with a tumor in either a perimotor or a perilanguage area? Are you using preferentially the navigated TMS, or do you like to have a gold standard MEG or fMRI for preoperative planning? How have things evolved for you?
So what we do in recent years, we're using a navigated TMS prior to surgery to get some information and to get some feeling for the extent of resection we can achieve when tumors, whether they're language or motor eloquent. So we're using this in order to get our pre-surgical information. And we had it for some tumors which seemed to be unresectable because they were growing directly in the M1 area, where TMS showed us that there has been some plasticity, primary motor function moved away, and the tumor was resectable. So it can be an important pre-surgical information about the resectability of a tumor, whether you can approach it or not. And we're using this since 2011, where we started to use the navigated TMS. And prior to this, we did use some functional MRI, but not on a very regular basis because we would not rely our surgical decisions on fMRI due to those problems, those methodological problems with the functional MRI. And What we do since many years is using intraoperative stimulation. We started for many years doing primarily motor monitoring using whether it's transcranial or direct cortical stimulation. And in recent years, we moved on using more subcortical stimulation, whether it's motor or language map. And everything which is potentially in a language eloquent area is, of course, operated in awake surgery.
So for language areas, you're primarily using an awake surgical technique with cortical stimulation at the time of surgery. For motor region tumors, it sounds like you're frequently using a sleep surgery with continuous stimulation.
Yes, we're doing motor eloquent tumors only asleep. There's only a handful of cases we did for some special reasons awake, but about all motor eloquent generally are done in a sleep surgery with transcranial or direct cortical stimulation and subcortical stimulation.
Any special tips for the audience on how you handle lesions that involve the supplementary motor area or at the juxtaposition between SMA and motor area in terms of mapping? How do you decide what the posterior extent of resection might be in those tumors?
Well, it's important to identify primary motor area in those tumors by using either you started with the cortical stimulation and then when going subcortically, doing your subcortical stimulation in order to identify primary motor area and using the thresholds of stimulation. The question is how far you can go down with the stimulation, how close you can resect to the primary motor area. It might be somewhere between 3 and 5 milliamps, where it's still in a safe area to resect until you reach the primary motor fibers. And apart from that, when doing SMA area resections, there's nothing special for monitoring or mapping for SMA function. You just need to identify your primary motor area, and this is your posterior boundary for resection.
Very good. That's, I'm sure, helpful to readers who will be listening in. We have a center here at UC San Diego where we've had MEG, and at my prior institution on the East Coast, Mass General Hospital, we primarily used fMRI as our preoperative modalities for mapping. I think navigated TMS is a somewhat newer but also a very interesting technology that's likely that a number of centers will be using. Many of these things come down to a little bit of a practical matter. So MEG, for example, typically takes us a few days to organize and have processed, et cetera. For your navigated TMS, are you finding that you're able to just simply do that in a single session relatively close to the time of surgery and be rather expeditious about having the information available in the operating room?
Yeah, it's very fast. You could do a motor mapping in 40 minutes. You can do language mapping in about an hour. You can do it the day before surgery and have this information available for your navigation during surgery. And on the other hand, when doing TMS language mapping, you have the patient trained for what he needs to do during the operation because he already is trained in doing this object naming. You get some experience what it means to get his speech disturbance, and he's prepared for awake surgery in that way.
Oh, that's a very good point. I think you're right that, in essence, you're describing a practice session for the actual awake surgery itself. Well, this was, I think, a very interesting and helpful overview article that you've written describing your experience with these modalities, and I know that it's an area that's of much interest to those who operate on low-grade glioma, and particularly those tumors which are in motor and language-sensitive areas. Anything else, Dr. Ringel, that you'd like to add as we come through this podcast?
Nothing special. I think I've already said is electrophysiology is the gold standard, which is very important, and I think it's indispensable in when dealing with those tumors.
Well, very good. Again, this is a great article, and we appreciate you contributing to this issue of the neurosurgical focus and highlighting your work through this podcast.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This concludes our podcast for the January 2015 issue of Neurosurgical Focus. Please join us for the February issue when the topic will be Cushing's disease, diagnosis and management. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. And for more information on how to submit your research to the Journal of Neurosurgery, please visit thejns.org and click on Info for Authors.